Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ancient Warfare Podcast. My name is Jesper Ortiz, and I'm the editor of Ancient Warfare Magazine. And with me tonight are Mark DeSantis and Murray Dam, who is the assistant editor of Ancient Warfare, and both of which you are very used to. And we have a guest today as well, and that is Mark Bierman. So to make our lives more easy, we have two Marks as usual. We can't even distinguish them now by asking for Mark C or Mark K with a K. But I guess in this case, our guest Mark will have to just assume that all questions are directed at him. You might not recognize his name, but you may subscribe to his YouTube channel, which is Imperium Romanum. He's a channel with seeing about 46,000 subscribers, which is a pretty good start, because I don't think you've been at it for a very long time, and there's not a ton of videos. Usually you see people having to put out dozens and dozens of videos before they get anywhere, but you seem to have taken off very quickly. It's a channel that does, as the name suggests, a lot of Roman history with a lot of high-quality reenactment in it, which we thought might appeal to our listeners and worth a chat. So welcome, Mark.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
Can you tell me, maybe to start off, how did it come about? Did you just decide, we got some iPhone cameras here and we're at a reenactment event, let's go record something?
I wish it was that easy. No, it was a friend of mine, the other guy that presents a lot of the videos, Flores. I've known him for like 30 years, since kindergarten, and we've always been into history. And I'm, like this enthusiastic guy. So, we should go into reenactment and we should do stuff with Roman history. And he was like, nah, I don't know, the two of us, what are we going to do? And then I was like, yeah, he's probably right. So it just, nothing really happened. And then I met Alain, the guy with the big beard, at my work. And I found out pretty soon that he was a huge nerd, just like me. But I had one problem. He was into Vikings. So I brainwashed him into Roman, basically. And then he was.
Oh, well, you'll have to tell us how you do that.
Yeah, well, just keep talking about him. I saw him like pretty much every day at work. So I said like, hey, man, he thought that the Romans, he had this stereotypical view of Romans, like, bathing all day and drinking wine. And the Vikings were all masculine, tough guys. So I was like, no. Well, look, they can be tough guys as well. And then he was like, oh, yeah. And so we became good friends. And then after a while, he was like, he actually said like, shouldn't we do something like, I don't know, dress up? And then I was like, well, what a nice idea. So then we again contacted Flores, like, you're still in for it. And we were like, and he was like, yeah, sure. Why not? We just give it a shot and we'll see. We'll start an Instagram, see how it goes. And we'll just go out into the woods in authentic gear and march a bit, make some photos and, have a weekend with a few beers and we'll see how it ends. And then our Instagram like sort of exploded really fast, especially for an Instagram that is focused on ancient history. We were up to like 2,000 followers in a year. And a guy contacted us that worked for Invicta. And he said like, what I saw, and we did auxiliaries, by the way. We did, I don't know exactly how to say this tribe in English, but the Cananefates, I think.
Yeah, the Cananefates, yeah. So the Western Dutch tribe.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly where we live. So we thought that was original because everybody does legionary reenactment and we wanted to do something different. So Invicta told us, like, I want to make a video with the main focus point being auxiliary units. And you guys look really cool, so do you guys want to help me? And we were like, are you serious? Yeah, of course, dude. I mean, we're like, we only have one Instagram account. We've only been here for like a year and you ask us? Yeah, dude, we're going to help you. So our first YouTube experience basically was filming for Invicta for Julian in the Ardennes. And it was, in hindsight, it was so stupid because we had no idea what we were doing. Flores worked as a photographer and he would just take his camera and we would, okay, what should we do? Something like packing gear? Yeah, I guess. Okay. Bloop. And Alain would pack his gear and then we would say, okay, what's next? Cooking dinner? Yeah, sure. And we would cook dinner and And when we had all the footage delivered to Invicta, he was like really enthusiastic, and he said, "Oh, this looks great! It looks so authentic." And then we were like, "Well, why just not start our own YouTube channel? I mean, if it's apparently good enough for him, we can do it ourselves as well." And so it started the idea of starting our own YouTube channel. And long story short, here we are.
Wow! So you started your own reenactment group as a part of this whole thing, despite the fact that there are at least three, four, how many are there in this country? Four or five, maybe?
Yeah, four or five, something like that. Yeah. But the problem was we didn't want to be dependent on other people in terms of equipment or opinions or the way they wanted to go with their group. You know, we just wanted to do our own thing. So we just decided, you know, there's the three of us and we'll see where it ends.
And how did it go from there? I mean, you just recorded video and then...
No, it's a long process. We really had to think, like, how are we going to make ourselves special? Because, you know, our main weapon, so to speak, is that we do exactly what those people did, or at least we try to. And that's what not a lot of YouTube channels are doing, or at least, you know, most people do everything with artwork. But we actually have the stuff and show people the stuff, and that was our secret, basically. So we wanted to make something special. So we had to figure out, okay, so how is a video from Imperium Manum going to look? Are we going to just talk into the camera and tell a story? Are we going to mix it with artwork? What are the stories going to be? They need to be original. We don't want to chew out the same stuff that other channels already have. So Flores is the one who writes the episodes, which takes approximately about 6 weeks for one episode to write it all up. And then, you know, we just sit together and we look at what we have. We plan a weekend. Going into camera gear was a lot of work. What camera is best suited for our type of filming? What software do we use to edit it? I think it took us about 2 years before we had our first three videos, and that was the Batavian one, the Auxilia versus Legionary one, and the one that we actually shot in Rome itself. And it took us about 2 years to make those three episodes, and that we thought at some point, all right, this is going to be it, and this is the quality that we always want to achieve.
How do you negotiate around the "we don't know" issue of reenactment?
Exactly that.
Right. Perfect.
It's funny that you say that, because we had a filming day last Sunday about the fourth century warfare in the fourth century. And we simply say at the video, it might be this, it might be that, but to be honest, we just don't know. And we don't want to, you know, you have some YouTube channels that just say it was like this or it was like that, but we don't want to go that way because so many things is just unknown. So we do a suggestion what we think might be possible, but we're not saying that is the way it was.
The Legionary had a gladius, a short sword, the pilum, heavy throwing javelin, and the scutum, whereas the Auxiliary had the smaller oval shield, a short spear, and a longer sword. Why do you think the Romans had that kind of different arms for their soldiers? And did you ever come up with a preference for either or? What would you rather fight with if you had the need?
Well, I think it is all in the way of a different style in fighting. I mean, just like with modern armies, you have different groups of soldiers that have different ways of operating. You have like armored infantry, you have parachute regiments. And I think in antiquity, it wasn't much different. Different troops had a different role. So I think the Auxilia troops, first of all, they were recruited mainly from tribes that were already used to fighting with longer swords. So I think it's rather logic that the Romans, pragmatic as they were, just thought, well, if that's what you're used to, you know, we're not, you know, we're going to change a few things so that you can fit in our army. But if this is what you're used to, we're fine. And for me personally, I've worn both pretty often. And I do think I prefer the Legionary outfit because the big rounded curved shield offers excellent protection, and the combination of the curved shield and the short sword is just brilliant, in my opinion. So if I was being given a choice, like you got to choose right now, I would choose the legionary fighting style. But it all depends on the situation, of course. Maybe in some situations I would prefer the auxilia equipment, but.
Well, it's interesting because when you look at, I know it's controversial because it's a column. But when you look at Marcus Aurelius's column, they've got curved oval shields, and then you have the issue that did they move to curved oval shields, and then they show a testudo on that? Nope, they're curved rectangular shields there. And then the only shield to survive from Dura Europus is indeed a curved rectangular shield from the following century. And you're like, yeah, but you've got Marcus Aurelius's column where. Everyone's got a curved oval shield, not just Praetorians, everybody. And you're like, was that a thing? And you're like, we don't know. We're not sure. Maybe choose one or the other for what suits you best. And then, of course, by the fourth century, you've got round and oval shields, flat round and oval shields, slightly dished. But, you know, I mean, that's something else. You know, what degree of dishing do you, what degree of curvature do you go for?
It's so difficult, especially shields, because, you know, like you just said, how many shields were found, like, in total from antiquity? I don't think, maybe 10 in total?
All of antiquity or just ancient Rome?
Ancient Roman period. Like,
well, I mean, there's, from Dura Europus, there are more fragments, I think, and various shield boards. There's some Germanic ones. Bits and shield board, I think. I mean, yeah, complete scuta. There's exactly two, I think. First century BC and third century AD. So do you make your own gear that is shown in the video, or is that a combination of stuff that you bought and made yourself, or how's that work?
Yeah, well, clothing is the area of expertise of Alain, the guy with the beard. He makes pretty much all of our clothing, and he is starting to become an expert on clothing by now, which is really nice. So when I want a nice, flashy pair of pants, I tell him, can you make me one? And then sometimes he says, no, I'm way too busy. But most of the time he says, yeah, sure. So when we need, like, last episode, we talked about the Torsberg trousers. And he made one, which turned out really nice. So it's really, really nice to have somebody who is skilled with clothing. And also he makes our military belts. But for like the real difficult stuff, like swords, scabbards, daggers, we have a blacksmith, Robert Wimmers. I don't know if you know him, Simon. He's from Pax Romana, who's also a very good blacksmith. And stuff like helmets, it's just so difficult, and we can't make that ourselves. We just order them from some specialist guys.
But there are limits, obviously. I mean, what would you like to do, but, you know, it's just outside of your reach? Because do you still work with just the three of you, or do you now work with other reenactment groups so you can present larger scenes, or and obviously surroundings play a role, because it's kind of hard to find ancient looking areas here in the Netherlands anyway.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we have gained some popularity with our first three videos, where we just were the three of us and some people that we knew. So we just, on Facebook, we were asking people like, hey, would you like to hang out with us and make a documentary with us? And the reenactors, the real hardcore reenactors, which does not include me, they're like, hardcore, whether it's minus 10, they don't care. They show up, you know. So we asked them, would you like to help us? And then we'll make sure you have enough to eat and drink. And they're like, yeah. So now we have this app group of all kinds of reenactors from all groups of the Netherlands. And when we say, you know, this weekend we're going to film, I see the apps like pop, 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 pop of everybody saying, yeah, we're coming. So the biggest group of soldiers we've had so far was like 22-ish. Which is pretty good. So yeah, we have a lot of enthusiastic people who are really willing to help us. We are not worried about having not enough people. And in terms of location, we're really lucky that, I don't know if you ever guys ever heard of Museum Park Orientalis in Nijmegen, which is sort of a theme park with an ancient Roman street, or at least reconstructed, obviously, and some other locations which are really good for filming. And yeah, we basically say, hey, can we film that weekend? And then they say, yeah, sure, why not? And we just give them footage that they can use for their museum, which normally costs them a lot of money. And in return for those videos, we can stay at the park for a weekend for free.
But that would, I mean, I'm familiar with that park. For everyone else, it was founded in the early 20th century as a, originally it was called the Biblical Open Air Museum, you know, the Holy Land away from home, or at home, really, based on travels of missionaries who went to the Holy Land, and they basically copied things from that time and added some more slightly more accurate stuff in the in period since, among which is the Roman street, which looks pretty good, but it's only a single street. Like, you don't have a Roman fortress or even a frontier fortification. I mean, like was built in Nijmegen, for a weekend 15 years ago. I mean, stuff like that, I'm sure, is on your list to do, but that's just, I guess you're going to need a giant budget to pull that off.
Yeah.
Do you have much like location scouting to go, we got to go and film something, you know, trip away to Hadrian's Wall, film on Hadrian's Wall or Xanten or somewhere else? I mean, one of the advantages, of course, you get this bit of bush here. This is the Teutoburger Wald, but it's nowhere near the Teutoburger Wald. Well, yes, but it's a bit of bush here with some trees, you know, and then you'll get the historical reenactment botanists who'll be like, well, that breed of tree, that didn't exist.
Oh, it's funny that you say that, because we had this filming weekend at a reconstructed Germanic farm, and it had some sort of flower growing there. I don't know. And it was one comment that said, oh, this was one of the best videos I've ever watched on YouTube. But what is that flower doing there? Shame on you guys. And we're like, dude, I have no idea what you're talking about. So no, scouting locations is definitely a thing, because we don't want to wear out our locations too much. But again, it's really difficult, because a lot like Xanten, they charge like $1,000 a day, no matter if we are a small YouTube channel or a big budget film studio. So that's, you know, out of the question. But it surprises me how much locations are actually quite willing to receive us. So that's a positive, that's something really positive. But in the end, you are quite limited to a few locations that you try to use as best as you can. But again, it's pretty difficult, especially bigger fortifications. That's really difficult. We have a watchtower that is completely installed with authentic, you know, like beds and everything that we can use, which is pretty nice. But we are looking for, like, indeed a big fortress or something really epic. But first of all, it's not really existent. And second of all, the ones that are there are really difficult to film there for, you know, no money, basically, because we have no real budget.
How fatiguing is wearing all of the armor and the gear, the between the shield, the helmet, the armor, everything that you have with you as you move around? Does it become, oh, this is annoying, I need a rest, or is it distributed fairly evenly and you could go for a long period of time?
Well, of course, it depends on how physically fit you are in the first place. But for me personally, the longest thing we've done, I think it was like 12 kilometers, where we were wearing in total, I think, 15 to 20 kilos. If you just take a rest with your furka, which is pretty long, you just can just put it in the ground, basically, and you just rest for 5 minutes after a few miles. No, it's pretty doable. Yeah. And so I think if you train a bit, I have never felt like really cumbersome or really tired really fast with that gear. I mean, taking a wee with the military belt is a nightmare. But besides that,
good to know. This is the kind of stuff.
That's the kind of stuff you figure out when you wear that stuff. You know, like, you got to take a pit. Yeah. Like, see? Oh man, this just doesn't work.
No literary source mentions that.
No, exactly.
Interesting. I was wondering if there are any plans to reenact actual events in terms of the march time. So, for instance, the the revolt of the Batavi, the marching between camps, like to actually achieve, if you, or one of Caesar's speed marches, you know, that can you envisage that we've got to get from here to here, you know, bridge the Rhine in 18 days, go. So, you know, that kind of
stop traffic for 18 days on the Rhine. That'd
yeah,
be fun.
Yeah. You know, that kind of idea of taking a known historical event with a particular speed in time in terms of march, and then film a documentary about, you know, here we are on day five and everybody's falling because they can't keep up the pace, or, you know, we're not fit enough, or
yeah, we definitely are planning on something like that, at least to have a march at like the 25 kilometers that they on average would have marched. But the problem is that we need good weather, because I'm not going to, because, you know, well, we need good weather in terms of, we want to do it in summer because we want to sleep in tents as well. You know, we want to do it really good. So like 3 days, sleep in tents. But to organize, you know, that kind of thing is, it's so much work. Who has an authentic, completely leather tent? It's like one guy. Does that guy feel like helping us? You know, so we are definitely planning something like that. But also, I don't think we should forget that people from that period were just, especially in comparison to now, were just extremely fit. I mean, there were no cars, there were no staircases that would just go automatically. You know, people were so much more fit than than we are today. So I think we would actually need to train for such an event, because if you're going to walk for 5 days, 25 kilometers a day, with 30 kilos of equipment, I don't know, man. That's pretty hard.
Yeah, you're not going to do that cold. No, that's
true. No, exactly. So we are planning such a thing because it's really cool, you know, and that will make you feel like the way it was for sure. But because it's such a difficult thing, because like you said, I need to train like 3 weeks at least 6 weeks in advance, and walking through the neighborhood in full Roman gear. You know, that's what I got to do.
And then you've got to build up to the, yeah, and now fight a battle at the end of it. You're like,
I need a rest. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite piece of Roman gear, or is there one piece of gear that especially impresses you for whatever reason?
Yeah, I think my favorite piece of gear is the belt, because the way it was constructed, and the way it looked in some cases, of course, some were really plain and simple, but some of them were like really elaborate. Yeah, definitely the belt, although impractical as hell, is one of my favorite items, because it looks really nice. It sounds really nice. You know, when you hear the clinging of the little metal objects, you know that there's a legionary or at least a Roman soldier coming, you know, those sounds. It's definitely my most favorite object, yeah.
Do you have any idea who watches your videos? Or is it just, you know, people like the Ancient Warfare podcast readership?
I hope so. yeah, they are. I think it's a pretty, well, Americans, a lot of Americans, 30% of all our viewers are from the United States. They just love European history, I think. And yeah, people who just enjoy history. You have these hardcore ancient history people that, you know, like the flower guy, you know, those kinds of people.
Oh, I think he's a step beyond, you know.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. And we have just people who are generally interested in history, and, you know, they're on YouTube and say, "Oh, Romans, let's watch a video about Romans." So it's a mix, but if I read the comments, there are a lot of people who are really orientated on Roman history, which is really nice. And what they say is also really cool, that they're like, "Oh, you guys are the only ones that actually show more or less, of course, the way it was." And that's the compliment that I'm basically looking for, because that's what makes us special. And you can draw an image of a Roman soldier, but it doesn't come as close as to the actual Roman soldier.
We can have a whole separate podcast about that one, I think. maybe another time. Do they pitch topics at you? I mean, how do you get to new topics? Is it just, you know, your audience, or is it just you sit down and three of you have a beer and ideas roll out?
Yeah, well, the last thing for sure, and sometimes, you know, I just read a book about something, or Ancient Warfare is actually the inspiration of one of our, I think, most exciting episodes for the new season. So yeah, Ancient Warfare, definitely. But also, you know, when we were in Rome last year, I walked I walked beside the Temple of Mars Ultor. I was like, of all these people walking by, who has any idea what they're looking at? Now, at the Forum Romanum, they know, you know, the Republican Forum, which is the hotspot of Rome. Everybody knows more or less what they're looking at. But a temple like Mars Ultor, which is a bit secluded, no one really knows. So let's make a video about that, you know, and then comes the idea. And also people who comment like, can you do the Dacian Wars? And then I'm like, yeah, sure, start off easy. But but definitely people in the comments are an inspiration for us. And we read all comments. So the Dacian Wars are definitely on our list for everyone listening. But it will be one of our biggest projects. And when we do it, we also will be doing it in Romania. So that's going to be a big one. So that's more or less how we get topics.
But will it be Domitian's campaigns or Trajan's or... use Murray, who wrote several articles about it, as your historical advisor?
Well, Murray, here's the invitation.
Well, it's a pity I'm in Australia, but I'll always welcome Romania. I've got, Alice would be happy. Yes. So it's really interesting because maybe controversial. I think Trajan copies out of Domitian's book, but because Domitian is Damnatio Memoriae, he doesn't have to credit his source. So it's like, well, why did you go there? Oh, you followed what Domitian did. Oh, why'd you build that? Oh, because you followed Domitian. Oh, interesting. Anyway, not to mention, I'm sorry, I'm going to geek out now. The leading general of Trajan's campaign was Frontinus's son-in-law, Senecio. And Frontinus was probably one of the consilium during the Dacian War. So it's like, it's all connected. All connected.
It's one big conspiracy.
It is, absolutely. Very, very obscure ancient history conspiracy theories that only I subscribe to. That's right. Is that got a physical date attached or just a nebulous
no,
in the future?
Well, the first real historical location that we're going to visit is going to be Germany, actually. We're going to make a 6-part documentary about the Romans in Germany and the Lowlands, and then we're going to visit multiple locations, including the Teutoburg Forest, of course. So that's going to be, we're first going to work that one out, and then we see how that gets, how people like, if people like it or not, and then maybe there will be a same kind of thing for Trajan's Wars. But like I said, it's going to be such a huge project. And this is not our job, you know, we have full-time jobs. I have small children. So, yeah. So
are they interested?
Well, my daughter's 2.5.
No, well, so she doesn't get a choice. She could be a Roman. Exactly. Two and a half year old. Yeah. Yeah.
She thinks that Florus built a Colosseum because when we were in Rome, we drove by the Colosseum and I said, look, what's that? And then she actually said Romeine, which is the Dutch word for Romans. And I was like, oh, I'm so proud. And then Florus built that. And I'm like, not really, but you're giving
me credit. I'll take it.
Yeah. So she thinks, because she's 2.5. So everything is interesting. What I think, you know, when I say something interesting, she finds it interesting. So that's pretty funny. But like I said, you know, it's not our job. YouTube is not our job. So it consumes so much time. It's about 150 hours for one video of work. And that besides a full-time job and, you know, family for all of us. So a lot of people ask us, like, why don't you crank out a video every 2 weeks? They were like, yeah, you have no idea. No.
Yeah, yeah. Have you tried scheduling anything with a friend? It's like, oh, coordination.
So, but you mentioned season. Season coming out. Do you sort of plan it as a season? Like we release 5 or 10 or 12 episodes, and then we'll just, you know, then we'll stop and we'll prepare another series, or
yeah.
Is that how it works? They're done when they're done?
we really weren't going. Our first season, so to speak, was, I think, now like 9 episodes. And when we started our channel, when we launched our channel, we had 6 ready and 3 were still in progress. And we had to plan, like, we're going to post every 4 weeks on Friday at 1900 hours. That's going to be the plan. But then we figured out, like, it takes so much time to make a video. One every 4 weeks is just not doable. It's just not possible. So for the next season, we're not going. I was sometimes working until 2 o'clock at night while I had to get up at 6 the next morning because the video had to get done that day. And we said, like, we don't want to do that anymore. We're not going to pin ourselves to a certain date. We're just going to post. And then we'll see when we post again. It might be 2 weeks, it might be 4 weeks, it might be 6 weeks. But, you know, it's not our job. So it still needs to remain fun, you know. That's really important. So we don't want to stress about it, which inevitably always happens. You always stress about it a bit. But so like a season, yeah, we are looking at it at the season. But now our supply of videos will be quite higher than we had previous season. But you know, we're like, we'll see where it ends. We're just going to post every now and then. And once we're out of videos, we'll have a pause again, probably. We'll see.
What's the most difficult thing about making these videos that you never expected when you started on it?
Camera gear.
Technical stuff.
Such a pain.
He said with pain in his voice.
There's always something. It's like when we just finished a weekend of filming and we're all like hyped up, like, oh yeah, we did so great. And then you find out there was this really small spot on the lens of your camera that you don't see on your screen. Even we also have a bigger screen. You just don't see it. And we're like, oh. Okay, well, that was 48 hours and a lot of planning that just went to the garbage bin. Well, you know, like the half of it was unusable, or we have so much. I dropped an external hard drive once without making a backup, which I always do, except that one weekend. You know, of course, it's all these technical stuff. Or I'm telling a story, like, and then I put my headset on, and then I only hear like nothing. So, oh yeah, the mic wasn't on. You know, those kind of stupid things. Is the camera gear is always a pain. And we're doing this now for 2 years and we've become pretty professional, but still. And now I never understood why a cameraman needed like 5 assistants. You know, when you watch the movie, you see like first assistant, second assistant. And I was like, why 5, dude? You drink coffee every day and you tell everyone to get, but now I get it because, you know, they're just checking that everything is all right, and then you can go. And we have to do this for ourselves. So, yeah, camera gear is definitely the biggest pain, for sure.
I think one of the other problems, of course, is that when you go into a production, they've got the people who are experts in, you know, the camera gear, the sound gear, the props department, the costume department, the makeup department, and you're all those things. So it's like, you know, and the problem is that all of those things on a film set can take place around one another. So while the sound guys are setting up, you're in makeup and costume, then you go to props, and then, you know, all the production and catering, very important. Whereas you guys are in charge of all of it, so it can't happen at the same time. You've got to do bit by bit by bit by bit. So that, you know, just adds, and of course, wearing all those hats, there's going to be something that, you know, when your makeup person is worried about your eyelashes, you can't have that worry when you've got all the other things to sort of put on the top. So that just compounds all the issues, I think.
You just hit it exactly the way it is. It's I mean, also catering is really funny because, you know, when 20 guys are coming, you need to have 20, you know 20 guys are going to drink a beer, and they're not going to drink one beer, you know. They want, and you want to take good care of them because, you know, they're not getting paid to stand in -5 on a field in there without trousers on, because, you know, for the film it's summer. So, you know, you need to take care of them really well, and you want to do that. So after a whole day of shooting, I'm like baking burgers, making sure everyone has a beer, and yeah. And the cold is also one of the things that is just never, I know people back in ancient times weren't cold, but when I'm on film, I don't want to look like this with 40 tunics on, you know. So a lot of times you're like shaking, and then you're on set, and then you're like, okay. And then you talk, and you say what you need to say. And after that, you're like, oh man, it's so freaking cold. Because you don't want to look like, you don't want to look like, you know.
So should we be putting out a call for people who want to just help with that kind of stuff? Should they just contact you on your YouTube channel and say, I want to be your catering assistant?
Oh, that would be free. Awesome.
Or your, yeah. I don't know, we'll, best we'll, boy, what are they all called?
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
The grip.
Oh, yeah. We'll
yeah, here. Yeah, yeah. Yep, the dolly, the like the hooey, the watsy. Yeah, that's funny.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah.
That takes out so much
pressure. Have you thought about green screen CGI skins for some sets and scenarios?
Oh, sure. But again, money is an issue, because a lot of people think that when you have a YouTube channel that is running pretty well, like ours, that, you know, you can buy a new car every day, but that's just so far from the truth, because YouTube itself does not pay you anything significant unless you have at least like 200,000 views. I mean, it's on average, it's like 500 USD for 100,000 views, which is, if you compare to our expenses in terms of camera gear and stuff that we need to make, is just nothing. So what you really need is people who want to offer you like a sponsorship, and they pay pretty well. But then again, you know, you have these guys that spit out like two videos a week. So, you know, then you have a budget, but we're like once every 4-6 weeks. So a lot of people are like, oh yeah, you have a new YouTube channel with 46,000 subscribers in a year, in just a year. Wow. You must be swimming in money. And then we're like, no.
Not a couple extra zeros, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we have all these exciting ideas, and we're also saving money for some really cool projects, but it's a long run, you know. It's just, you need so much money for this stuff, and yeah, we just don't have a lot of money.
And as you say, because it's a hobby, you want to keep it fun.
Exactly.
And there's that problem that if you push too hard on a hobby that ceases to become fun, not only do you lose your hobby, because you're like, I don't like that hobby anymore. That hobby's no longer fun. And it kind of, and that's a really hard balance to fit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we all have had moments that we're like, we're going to quit. You know, when I dropped the hard drive, everyone like, we were all like, you know, like, why don't we just quit? But then we're like, no, this is our dream. And, you know, we have a really loyal fan base, because we have only gained subscribers while we haven't posted in 5 months. And people are still waiting for our content. So we have a really loyal, really loyal fan base. And I also feel obliged to them to just keep making cool content, because.
And in that 5 months hiatus, are you communicating with them saying, we're planning, we've got things and, you know, in motion?
Yeah.
And,
Yeah, especially on our Patreon. We have a Patreon, which is really a loyal, dedicated group of supporters. So we keep them up to date of everything that we do, that we are planning. We make photos when we're in the car going to a next filming event. So, you know, to keep them up to date. And on YouTube itself, we just posted a message like, okay, we're going to be away for a few months. So if you don't see anything happening, you know, that's just the way it is. But we'll be back with awesome content. And everybody was fine. We've only gained subscribers while we haven't posted. That's pretty
fantastic. Pretty nice.
Yeah,
unusual, I would say. In the algorithm.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the positive side of being in a niche. Of course, you know, if you Google, I don't know, like sports review, there are thousands of channels that cover sports, but there are very little channels that cover ancient history, let alone people that are actually reenacting it. So that's why it's a really loyal fan base that actually literally tells us, you are the only guys who are doing this. It's so awesome. We're not going to leave you behind, so to speak. So,
I can't get my fix anywhere else. So you guys are it. So
yeah, like, exactly. They're like history junkies, and we're their drugs, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And have you been asked to do like little videos of, can you show us making a piece of clothing? You know, the Torsberg trousers, can you show us making those? Can you show us making, you know, in a blacksmith's, you know, how a blacksmith makes it and so that you sort of start to expand out the time, like, you know, a modern dress blacksmith. I'm assuming he doesn't blacksmith in costume. I mean, let's face it, top, you know, stripped to the waist. It's like, well, that looks the same modern or ancient. You know, that kind of, you know, show you pounding the metal or show you doing those sorts of things to add incremental types of video. Is that something that you've thought about?
We have thought about it, but I think like making a Thorsberg trousers is so specific that only a very tiny portion of our followers would be really interested, because, you know, everybody knows who Julius Caesar was. Everybody knows that the Romans once occupied a large part of the world, but who knows what a Thorsberg trousers is? I mean, that's like a really small percentage of people.
We had an article about that Germanic warrior with the Thorsberg trousers only 3 issues ago. So, you know, that's there's many thousands of people who know what it is.
No, sure.
Make no mistake.
But still, that niche is also still a niche, you know. So for us, we really need to focus on how much work will it be to make a video and how popular is it probably going to be. And for us, you know, how to make a Thorsberg trousers, it might be successful, but it's for me, it's really difficult to make up that balance with such a talk.
So in the end, the algorithm still rules all, even if you try to just do what you want to do. And
views are down for a lot of History Channel because YouTube is being quite frantic about anything that only hints towards violence, which is ridiculous because they'd rather have you look at something with, you know, like something like, oh, I bought new shoes, great, 1 million views. But something, which you can actually learn something or which has your interest is being set aside because I mention the word war or conflict.
I bought new color guy, 1 million.
I was going to say, I bought new shoes. They happen to be Roman sandals. It's like you're buying into the algorithm. You might come up on the, you know, on the feed.
Look,
on the
okay. Right side. You know, high class ones. Yeah, sure.
We might try.
All right. Last one, I think. What was the best thing that you found that you hadn't expected about making these videos?
The growth of the channel. Our goal was to hit 5,000 subscribers in 12 months, and we hit 43,000 in 12 months.
Nearly 10 times as many. Yeah,
in a relatively short amount of time, working together with Invicta after we've just started with one of the biggest history channels on the planet. We are now going into a partnership with Darius Arya. You know, people suddenly know where you are, who you are. I've been calling with his favorite, at least for us, famous historians who are contacting us like, yeah, sure, let's do something together. And I mean, that gives me so much energy, especially, I don't know if you guys know Darius Arya, I think you do. But you know, I was in Rome and just gave him an Instagram message like, hey man, I know you live in Rome. You might not have heard of us. I had a couple of wines, I must admit. And I said, if you want to hang out, let me know. And then he didn't send me anything back for like a day. And I thought, oh, you know, this man is so busy. You know, he has like 300,000 subscribers on Instagram. This man is busy. And then 2 days later, hi, Mark, sorry to contact you so late. Yeah, I'm at this and this place at 12. You want to have a coffee? And I was like, oh, man, I'm back in the Netherlands by this time.
No.
But we, you know, we call each other up, and now we're going to make a series together, which is really cool. And those are the kind of things that really gives us energy, that we keep growing. And also what really, really gave me a lot of energy and all the guys is the deal we have with you guys, with Ancient Warfare. I mean, to be able to use your art is just one of the biggest pluses that we could have hoped for, because it's so much work to find good artwork. First of all, it's all copyright. So if you find a good thing, you need to change it. And that's so much work. And you don't want to get something that somebody else has made. And now we have access to some superb high quality artwork, which is just amazing. So that, you know, those kind of things is just what makes me really happy.
Well, hopefully we're all very eager to see, I think, what the new season will be like. So go see it at Imperium Romanum on YouTube. It's not very hard to find. Assuming you know how to spell that one, but I think we can. Our audience like, knows how to do that.
It spells like it sounds, really.
Yeah. Last thing, Murray, you can help me with this. Yes. We happen to know that we have a copy of a paperback copy of Mike Cole's Legion and Phalanx, I believe, and we need to get rid of it, don't we?
We do. We do. So we would like our loyal viewers to write 25 words or less, one of those ones, what they like best about Ancient Warfare. Magazine, not Ancient Warfare, the field of study.
That's interesting too. If it's a really good one, might let
okay.
that
through. All right, 25 words or less, what you like best about Ancient Warfare, either the magazine or indeed the field of study, and we will wing a copy of Mike's paperback.
Where should people send that? Should we send it to awa@ancientwarfare.com? Might be handy.
What he said.
awa@ancient-warfare.com.
Yes.
And if it's a question, we'll just find it too and answer that in due course.
Yeah, if you've got a question, then we'll add that to the Ancient Warfare answers and we'll see if we can answer it. Yes. Several of those questions, of course, come through and we're like, we don't know. I can't answer that. I can't say we don't know for 10 minutes. I'll just say we don't know. Anyway.
But we do try. At least Murray tries mostly. Yeah.
Fabulous.
All right. Well, Mark, thank you very much for joining us. Yeah. Well, all the Marks. Yeah. But we know Mark the scientist knows that we're grateful for him joining us. But Mark Biermann is a little more special for this one time. But maybe we'll see you back someday.
I hope so. It was great.
Thank you for joining us. And we'll see everyone else very soon again. Bye-bye.